You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio. Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about Total Quality Relationship, TQR, and the E6 system. My gosh, what's that?
I guess it's one of the book.
Oh, look at that.
Oh.
E6. This actually book was written for business, and it was how to get your house in order to do a better job working with your employees, that the company was a system for helping employees in their growth and as well as providing value to your customers, creating value, value creation within your company. We've taken that and we've
transferred it
to relationship, because it's all the same thing.
Yeah.
If you believe that a company's strength is based upon its systems, then why isn't a relationship strength based upon its systems? For instance, what if people took responsibility for the systems they use rather than the partners they choose? Let's unpack that. I love this word, unpack. Everyone uses it today. Let's unpack that. Well, they've got a suitcase of information and they're going to unpack. Ooh, look, where did this come from? I have a pair of shorts in here. We're going to Alaska. Why do I need shorts?
Jacuzzi.
We're going to the jacuzzi in Alaska. It's just, we use terminology that sometimes is it cliche? Is it, everyone uses it, it becomes a fad? Kind of like behavior. Behavior becomes sometimes what is expected of us from social constructs, right? So what people are doing in society, that sometimes behavior is not based upon who we are as a unique individual, not who we are based upon millions of years of evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's not that. Sometimes it's not the family we grew up in.
It's a lot of factors.
There are a lot of factors. So today we're going to start off this whole E6 process about treating a relationship as a system rather than two individuals and see where we go. We're looking at obedience to authority, that from the time we're born to the things we see, that we follow the rules from conditioning. We have archetypes according to Jung, right? The Jungian philosophy of there are certain things cross-culturally that are similar that we see, like the bearded thin man who is the guru or the worship leader or the warlock, you know, like Merlin.
Mm-hmm.
So there, it's always a thin, tall guy with glasses and
so that's the beard. That you have to be.
Yeah, but I'm not tall and thin, so I'm only partly there. Yeah, whatever.
Okay.
But these archetypes contour our thinking of how we react in certain situations based upon the people in front of us, how they're dressed, how they look. And part of that is also due to the environment we're in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if we're in a very sterile environment where it's very clean and very well kept and very organized, we may be more relaxed. Maybe we're feeling a little uncomfortable because it's too clean. But if it's just completely a mess and it's dirty and there's somebody's lunch dropped on the floor, that gives us a different experience, a different feeling, and a different reaction. So the environment is really important as well. And then the context or situation, meaning what is happening right then and there? Is it an emergency? Is it an emergency and we just went to a medical facility?
Mm-hmm.
And we get to that medical facility, so that's the context and situation. A lot of stress, right? We're having this medical issue. And then there's food on the ground, and the place is a mess, and now, oh my gosh, we're freaking out because it's terrible. Or we get to that very sterile environment where everything's organized, and people have the proper uniforms, and they're very neatly dressed, and we go, you know what? I don't know if these are better doctors or better staff than the other place, but this is the way it should be done to instill confidence in me. So, again, how we've been conditioned, the archetypes and how they play in our mind when we see things and see people, the environment, and then again, the context or the situation, all impact how we react. And a lot of that impacts all those things, things that impact us. Sometimes it is the situation way above our own dispositions, you know, how we grew up, how we were born. That impacts us in one way, but the situation, the context, the environment, all can make us behave in a way that goes counter to how our dispositions. And we're going to talk about a couple of studies. We're going to talk about the difference between dispositional and situational constructs in human behavior. We're going to talk about Milgram's study, the obedience to authority study, which was based upon the design of the experiment or the design of the interaction between the different players in the experiment. Zimbardo, the Stanford prison experiment. A lot of people probably know about that. We'll talk about that, and that is position authority and how people act to the position they're put in, and they change the way they behave and how that's an automatic response. And sometimes we've got to understand that to know how people react with each other. And then we can talk about Caracas, the metro story. It's a design, a layout of a facility to promote, encourage certain behavior. So it's basically how the building flow is laid out. And then we want all that. We want the authority, we want the position authority, we want the design, we want that all to be in congruency with the behavior we want. You asked me a question before. Do you remember your question?
No. Which one?
What does this have to do with relationships?
Exactly. So what is all this topic that you put is, I mean, relationship?
So all these things, and you think about it, is that these things force us into certain behaviors in everything else we do. You know, how we drive, where we work, what we expect in an office, what do we expect when we go to the grocery store. All these designs, they're ingrained, they're burnt into our brain as being normal and moving us to a certain behavior. No matter what we really want to do, there are certain things we are expected to do and encouraged, and I'll even use the word coerced, into doing.
Okay.
Well, why not look at all those things and say, how do we do that in our relationship? How do we create, like, what should we be for the show? How do we dress for the show to give proper authority? Or, you know,
also the first message that you put, what kind of system we can create to working with your relationship.
Exactly. So this is the system we're talking about. Let's go on. Let's talk about one of these experiments. Actually, we're going to talk about both of these. We're going to talk about the Milgram experiment, which is obedience to authority. And then we'll talk about the Stanford prison experiment. We're going to try to blow through these real quick because we've got a lot of great information to open a suitcase and unload later.
So it's almost two or three shows.
It's two or three shows. And you're going to get two or three shows for the price of one show. Only one show cost, three shows worth of information.
Call 911.
What? Don't call 911. No, don't do that, please. We had that happen already. So let's go into the Milgram obedience to authority. The experiment is a situation of a laboratory where there are people who are told they're volunteering and they're going to be assigned to be somebody who is a tester or somebody who's going to be like the lab student, the person who's going to be experimented upon. And then there's a professor or person in a white lab coat who's running the study. The study has the, quote, lab student, the person who's being tested, go into a room where they're not seen, but they can be heard over microphone. But the other student who's, quote, assigned to be the tester, sees the person hooked up to electrodes and see that there's a microphone there so they can talk back and forth. And so the person is hooked up to the electrodes. This is the lab-tested person. And the other one, who thinks they've been randomly assigned to be the tester, goes to the other room. The other room has a series of buttons, and they have voltage markings on these buttons from 0 to 450 volts. And as you see the different voltage buttons, it says, you know, mild tickle, slight shock, harsher shock, burning, tingling sensation, potential death. It's just, it goes from this, these are innocuous shocks, innocuous shocks, to devastating, almost deadly shocks, right? Kill. The experiment is to help the lab student, the person who's in the lab, learn by shocking them when they get a wrong answer. And it's an experiment that the person in the lab coat, the doctor, the person running the experiment, is going to take data while the tester is pressing these buttons. So it starts off with a simple question, and they get that answer right, that's great. But then they go through a series of questions where the person who's the lab experimented person, who turns out to not be a randomly assigned student, but an actor.
Okay.
An actor that's not connected to anything, but is just playing along. Every time the person presses a button, they need to react in a certain way that makes it seem like they're getting shocked. So upon the first wrong answer, they press, the student who is the tester is told, press the button, press 15 volts. And they do. And the person in the other room kind of laughs, like, oh, that's not so bad, you know, that's not so bad. Well, they keep getting answers wrong, and the tester has to keep giving harsher and harsher shocks to the lab-tested student.
Okay.
And it goes from 15 volts to 30 volts to 100 volts, and now the lab-tested student, the actor, is going, ow, stop! Like they're starting to show that they're in pain. Well, the doctor, the person with the clipboard and the white lab coat, says, no, no, keep going, it's an experiment. How many of these testers, the students who were assigned as testers, do you think went all the way to 450 volts? Even though the lab tested person, the actor, is screaming, and at some point they don't even react anymore, like they're dead.
Okay.
How many go all the way to 450 volts at the prompting of...
I know the answer.
You know the answer?
100%.
So, no, it's not. It's not. 65% of the students who were assigned to be the testers went to 450 volts. That's 2 out of 3. Went all the way to 450, even though it said death or potential death, and there was no sound coming from the other room. Now, those students also would tell the doctor, the one with the, you know, the technician in the lab coat, hey, I'm not comfortable doing this. And all the doctor would say, or the, quote, guy with the lab coat would say is, no, no, go on. And they would just tell them to go on. And 65%, 2 out of 3 people did it. They went to 450. So why? Why is that? Oh, by the way, 100% of the students who were the testers pushing the button went to 300 volts, which, you know, that everyone got to the 300 volt part. So there was something that some, one third, would not continue on, which, hey, that's a good thing. A third didn't go on. But
some people take care of others, but the people follow the
authority.
Authority, yeah.
So archetype, authority. The situation, right? They're in this experiment. There's the lab. Everything's set up very scientific. It's the way the framework is put up for this experiment. Our relationships are in that same framework, right? That we have, how we interact with each other, how I dress, how you dress, how we carry ourselves, what we tell each other to do, what we're willing to do for each other.
Yeah.
Continue on with that. That when they did that same experiment, but they had the lab technician wear street clothes rather than lab coats, they only got 20% of the students who were the volunteers to go to 450 volts. That when the authority lost the look of being an authority and they just wore street clothes, the students were less likely to go all the way to 450 volts as a tester. When they changed the location from Yale University's facilities to just an old office downtown somewhere, they changed the design, that still 47.5% went all the way to 450 volts. So it was the authority figure, the person with the lab coat telling them to go on, that had the biggest bearing of whether they just obeyed authority.
Mm-hmm.
We are born to obey authority to our own detriment.
Mm-hmm.
Because we try to make quick judgments and assessments based upon what we see. And so something that's helped us in our survival, or at least has guided us towards survival over thousands and thousands of years, can also be used against us.
Hmm. Interesting.
The other one, and this one we'll have to go over much faster, or not, is the Zimbardo-Stanford prison experiment. And I'll just sum it up like this. This one was, there were no actors. There were just two types of people. They assigned volunteers who were paid $15 a day to either be prisoners or to be guards in this makeshift prison that they set up at Stanford. And they gave, they were like three meals a day for the prisoners, and the guards had to give them the meals. But the interesting thing about this prison experiment, I'm not going to get into the details other than that after 6 days, they had to end the experiment because the guards started torturing the prisoners. The prisoners started getting together in small little gangs to kind of try to fight back. The guards were taking, just because they were in the position of authority over the prisoners, they thought they could control the prisoners, tell them what to do, when they could eat, withhold food. Somebody had to tell Zimbardo, they had to tell him to stop the experiment because that was supposed to go on for, I think, 2 weeks. And it got so bad, the mistreatment, the inhumane treatment of volunteer students, well, they were getting paid, but they were getting paid $15 a day.
They enjoy the job so much. This is the way that you feel identified with your job.
So the question I have for you is, people are put into certain positions.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be that when people are put into a certain position, given a certain position of power, some will abuse that. Now, others that are dressed the same way have this bias, this affinity bias. Well, they're dressed like me. They have the same position as me. I like them better than I like the prisoner. And now the prisoner may be like, you know what? This other prisoner is acting up, but I'm a prisoner too. I have an affinity for my fellow prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And that there becomes this separation. The separation of there are extreme people just in society. And it may be a small amount of people that are extreme. But if they're grouped with another group, those people who are otherwise like that person, they're wearing the same uniform, they're in the same club, whatever it is, they happen to side with the crazy people more so than this other group just because of affinity. Not everyone. But we go through our life with all these clubs and things. Let's talk about political parties.
Mm-hmm.
That we end up in a political party and we may be more accepting of extremists in our own political party because otherwise, on all these other issues, they're like us and they call themselves this.
Yeah.
And once you decide what party you're in, if you're a prisoner or if you're a guard, you then side with them no matter what's going on. And only a few people will break away and go, you know what? I'm no longer a guard. I need to support the prisoners. I got to help the prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not that many prisoners who say, you know what? Some of the prisoners are acting up and acting in gangs. I need to start supporting the guards.
Yeah.
That there is that separation.
Yeah.
How does this affect and impact relationships? We're going to find out when we come back on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Thank you.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about, what are we talking about? Total quality relationships, mm-hmm. and how all these things we're learning about behavior and behavioral instincts and archetypes and dispositions and situations and contexts can be applied and help us change our relationships. So we are born with, you know, maybe personality traits. You know, there's some enduring traits that we have from the time we're little that we continue to have as we get older. There are other things we learn and we change our behavior slightly, but we have a personality.
Yeah.
And we have a general disposition in life. What we learn through these experiments that we just showed is that dispositions step aside for situations, how contrived, that a situation can be put in place that makes people act in opposite to how they normally are dispositioned, how their normal traits are, how they normally feel. We also talked about how a predisposition, I'm going to say how we were, a context that happened before, a situation that happened before, had a really, really bad day at work, something fell over, it cost the company $10,000. I'm really upset. I come home and you say something in relationship to, I left the coffee on this morning mm-hmm. and I didn't turn the machine off. And then I'm so upset about this, but it has nothing to do with leaving the coffee machine on. It's so upset already. Now I'm being picked on again. I'm upset. And so the predispositions and how we come into a situation also controls that situation. So how do we make those situations in our relationship work to our advantage?
You have to have our observation.
How about we employ what we call the E6 strategy in the relationship? And the E6 strategy talks about six E's. The E of expect, setting expectations for the relationship. Equip, have the proper equipment. And we're going to actually talk about real physical equipment in a relationship. Evaluate the relationship and how things are going. And then, therefore, what changes need to be made. EQ, you know what that is? Emotional intelligence and personality traits. We have to understand that. We have to be able to develop and how to develop better emotional intelligence. Understanding our own personality traits and then how we can interact with each other. Education, how we can grow and educate ourselves and the relationship. And then engage, how do we celebrate and reward ourselves for a great relationship?
I like this part.
You like this part?
Yeah.
As such, we go, how to get your house in order?
Important.
So we're using a house symbology here to link these six E's with the relationship, but looking at a house, that way hopefully helping us remember what these six E's are. When you come to the outside of a house, we see the front door of the house as like, this is how you want your relationship viewed. Right? This is what you want others as well as yourself to see the relationship. It starts off, setting clear expectations starts off with knowing who you are and how each of you are in the relationship. You want to talk just real briefly about this? Would you mind?
Me or you?
You. The who you are.
Yes,
right?
We have a chart in this book when you make a list, the who you are and what is you want in the relationship. But the way that you recognize who you are, because it's not easy, we establish some kind of example of list of who you are in the professional way, in religion, belief, and family, and business, and money, and health. You know, so it's the way that you start to recognize who I am in this situation. And then you recognize who you are.
So once you know who you are, and some of the stuff that we want to investigate comes from our personality, comes from our culture, comes from our education, comes, as you said, from professional.
Family, religion, belief.
All those things.
Spiritual stuff, yeah.
And then once you know who you are in yourself, you know who you are in relationship to others. So from there, you can say, hey, I'm in a relationship. I want to set an expectation. Let's do a mission and vision of our relationship. We want to grow our relationship. We want it to be stronger. We want to be happier. Here, what are the things that we want to see going together in the relationship? We want a cultural match, meaning others to see us as having the same culture. You know what that means? Mm-mm. So, like a company has an organizational culture, we want to create a relationship culture. We want others to see us as being the same, like the same people, mm-hmm. that we are considerate. We, you know, here are the qualities of that relationship. We're going to be considerate to others. We're going to listen.
And you have to be consistent. You remember one of my worker from Venezuela, that he know me for many, many years. So he want to meet you and stay here. He's staying home almost 3 weeks. Mm. And he can see our dynamic. And he say, that is a real relationship. So he say it's consistent. When I see in the book, I see it in your picture and Facebook, whatever, people believe, oh, that is for promotion.
Yeah.
But when you are this is a culture and home. So he can see that and he recognize what we have.
I was going to make a joke about this in a little bit, which we just come together for this show. We actually live apart. We're two different people. Her name's not even Lizette. Mine's not even Jim. All right, no, that's not true.
Russian Express.
We were hired to do this show. We're hired to play the role of Jim and Lizette. Mm-hmm. That how we are on the show, how we are in real life, and that's the point, is that I trust people who are the same in their relationship as they are in their professional life, as they are in a competitive mode, that they are the same across the board. That you trust people whose behavior is consistent. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that we're talking about in here when we talk about having whatever that consistent behavior is, that becomes the culture of your relationship, and you want it to match. You want to also have mutual goals and individual goals. You know, together we want to go on vacations, together we want to take dance lessons, but individually, I want to run a marathon. And Lizette wants to learn how to bake spanakopita, mm-hmm. which she knows already. But that you can have different goals that you support each other in. How do those goals that you have as individuals actually support the relationship as well? Clear communication. So we talk about clear communication, visual and omnipresent. The visual, we talked about this earlier today, about if you're thinking that you want to go on a vacation or you've gone on vacations, the thing about visual is have a picture of that place you want to go on the wall. You know, if you did go there already, you should be put a picture up somewhere, not just on Facebook, because you have like 5 billion pictures on Facebook, but something that's important to you.
Yeah, remind you.
Remind you of the things you've done together or the things you are going to do together. And it's a very positive. It's like the vision board. People create vision boards for themselves. Mm-hmm. This is like your wall of vision that you have together. It's visualizing what you're going to do together as a couple.
Yeah.
Do we want to move to the next one? So that's the expectations mm-hmm. slide. Let's go from expectations to equipping for success. Now, this is actual real. I want to talk about physical objects here. Is that in a relationship, we're going to talk about the garage. The garage is the house. The memory tip that we have is now we went from the front door, you know, the entry to the house. Now we're at the garage. This is where you keep your vehicles. It's where you keep your tools. It's where you keep your chemicals. Just think of the house garage as being the equipment for success. Now there's more stuff. Mm-hmm. But once you think of that, that's where you keep the equipment, the stuff you maintain your lawn. So what do you have for maintaining the relationship? We talked about this earlier. You could say, okay, I want coffee in the morning, and you buy yourself a little coffee maker, and we have coffee in the morning. Or we really want to have good coffee in the morning. It's part of our routine. Mm-hmm. We make a cappuccino or latte, just one, every morning. And it's every morning we do this.
We ground the beans.
7 days a week. Yeah. Grind the beans.
Yeah, do the espresso, fond the milk. Because we like to enjoy this moment. And then that is the point, I guess, the priority in the life. So sometimes we missing the priority, and maybe we are focusing in areas or in equipment that maybe is not for the relationship. So maybe spend more time distracting, I don't know, doing something versus the be focused and enjoy a coffee with your partner, right, or a glass of wine or whatever.
Sure. And going back to that is ritual. We talk about a ritual. You have relationship rituals. That's a ritual for us. It's a rite. We do it. It's very spiritual.
Our spiritual moment, right? Our moment, yeah.
You know, I get to make you something, bring it to you, and I do a terrible job putting the foam on. I try to make a pattern, but the idea is you put effort in. It smells great. And so when we talk about the appliances, we talk about things like your coffee maker, bed. You make sure that you guys have a really good bed, not just for your extracurricular activities, but for a good night's sleep. Nothing's worse than having two people who don't sleep well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a relationship the next day. Remember about your predispositions or how you're, you know, how you're going. So you go into the next day and you had horrible sleep, your HVAC's not working, your bed's bad.
Yeah.
And now...
Does this impact your emotion?
Yeah. So a relationship's more than just two people. It's this, as we said, equipment that's in the relationship. We're talking about really physical stuff. What else do we have here? We have, processes, recipes, and procedures. So that process of how we make coffee, when we eat, how we eat, the recipes that we use, and that's how you go about things. And these, again, physically real things. The environment, you know, how do we like the environment? We like the environment between 68 and 72 degrees. So the air conditioning's kept between 68 and 72. We like it a little colder sometimes, a little warmer sometimes, but it's a setting for the environment that is very pleasant. And so we have these things that make, you know, this is the second E, right? Equipping the environment and yourselves to be able to do things and have things and feel things in the relationship that make it a good relationship. You don't want things to take away. You want things to add to. And then I think the follow-up thing that we talked about, visual, is if we are talking about visual, say I wanted to remember how to make the coffee, so I make it, you know, the same way each day. I have a visual representation of that. We talked about also maybe some of those things that are important. We talked about the storyboard before, or the board, the vision board and pictures. Utilize some of those. What do you think comes after equipping?
Evaluate.
Are things working? Let's look at the relationship. Let's analyze it. Ooh, what are key performance indicators?
I like that.
You like that?
This is my question every day when I audit company.
So for me, it's how many hugs I get and how many kisses and how many smiles.
You have the data?
I do. I collect it.
And the trend? Mm-hmm. What if they have more kisses versus older day?
It's when you're here.
Okay.
When you're here,
I
have so many more kisses when Lizette's here than when she's not.
I hope when I travel, you don't have more kids.
Or kids? Yeah. No kids. Sorry.
No kids now.
So knowledge, skills, and abilities. So now this is evaluate. Is our knowledge for relationships, are the skills we have and the abilities we have in the relationship where we want them? So this is more of an analysis of where could we strengthen. So again, one was setting the vision and the expectation. Two was getting the equipment and environment correct for the relationship. Here we're evaluating our own physical skills, right? Our skills, our knowledge, abilities. And we talk about training. What training should we do? And what should we do to make us more effective in a relationship? These are tough things. We made, when we first came out with our book, 90 Day Soulmate, we did a couple of radio shows, and we used to talk about, you go to school for math, you know, 12 years or 13 years, you're going to school for math, and then you use it a little bit. You know, we talk about growing the mind and how that's useful. But what we don't do is have school for relationship. And then we're expected to get in one And if all goes well, we hope it lasts our life.
Yeah, yeah. So no,
for a long time.
No course about also be parents or be husband or wife. So it's something that
the important things.
Yeah, the important thing, because you doing this job for many, many years without training. So it's like that you learn in the action versus that you have a previous training.
And I think you're right on that. So finally on this thing is, so again, look at your relationship, analyze it, what's going well, what's not, what can be improved. Look at the performance indicators. What do you think would be, like, the number of times we go out and have dinner together, or that we stay home and have dinner together? Another would be is, do we have no phone time? Do we have the knowledge, skills, and abilities to have the effective relationship? And then again, what additional training might we want to get involved in? You know, do we want to do a show on relationships so we can research relationships and then have that carry over?
Yep.
we train ourselves by training others.
Yeah.
That's how it works. Let's start off again with emotional intelligence.
Okay.
When do we use emotional intelligence in our relationship?
In the critical situation.
In stressful situations?
Yeah.
So instead of lashing out, do you think before you speak?
Mm-hmm.
You talked about this a couple of weeks ago, about if you're in a situation where you want to respond right away and you're like, you know what, I'm going to give it a few minutes, let me relax. Or if you know I'm really tired and go, you know what, this having a conversation now is meaningless because half of Jim's brain shut off.
So it's better to wait and looking for the best moment.
And we all know that when you're angry, when the emotions are overwhelming, either when you're really in love or you're really angry, what happens? Your prefrontal cortex gets shut down. So when you have a discussion, when you're both angry, you're going to say the most illogical things because you don't have the capacity.
Yeah, you are blocking.
So you want good passion. You want like passion in discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean like anger as a passion. It means like you really want the best. And remember, we talked about like when you learn stuff with passion, your brain synapses and your neurons explosively grow faster. They don't explode, but they grow faster. Explosive growth.
Okay.
In a good way.
Okay.
Right? So you're getting new brain cells quicker when you're passionate about what you're learning. If you're bored with what you're learning, flow to your brain. You don't have the nutrients. You don't have the activity. It's like, I got to memorize this. If you don't have passion, it's hard to learn. So in a relationship, not only are arguments best when you are not angry, but you're involved, like you're emotionally committed to a positive outcome.
And did you say something important about feel passion for the stuff and the people waiting the passion outside again for the same message that you put in the beginning? And is it something that you have to be responsible? Is it, you remember when I training about clean the dishes, you know, is it something that people don't like to do?
Yeah.
But if you put the music, you put the glass of wine, and you start to clean the dishes, you enjoy and you be passionate to do stuff. Is it your own responsibility? No way for somebody externally to passion you.
Responsibility, that was one.
Yeah.
And also, be your own authority. Understand how you're wired to be obedient to authority, and understand that, I can make this decision, I can do this. And in terms of a relationship, if it is, I want to do what's best for the relationship, stop thinking of what someone else would tell you to do about the relationship, but start thinking about how you can make the best decision of how to have a better relationship with your partner.
Yeah.
Yep, and work on that. Let's move on. Oh, and I want to go back to the memory tip of emotional intelligence and personality is, if you see the circle here, we're looking at the foundation, we're looking at the HVAC room, we're looking at the water heater, we're looking at the core system, one, the foundation, and the thing that provides the heating and cooling to the house. And just remember, like, if it's too hot and you're too angry, that's not good for your house.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's too cold and you're not talking, that's not good for your house either. So emotional regulation, like heat and cooling regulation,
mm-hmm.
this is to remember emotional intelligence, is how you are able to, and I think we actually have a slide on this here, recognize the emotion in your partner. Recognize and then manage your own emotions. Manage the situation and the emotional content by trying to down, if there's a lot of heightened emotion, try to reduce the emotion, especially if it's anger. You try to get beneficial outcomes for all involved. Part of that, and we talked about the facial recognition, we're not going to get into that big time today, but really being able to study the face of your partner and understand when they're really angry but they're not telling you, or if you feel like they're tired, look and see, feel, read their body language and learn, is this not a good time to have this discussion? You can say, it looks like you may be tired, or if you're tired, it's okay, let's do this tomorrow. Or you may say, well, maybe they're tired and they're angry, and if I say that will set them off. So maybe you'll be emotionally intelligent and say, you know what, I'm tired right now. I really want to make sure this conversation goes well and we get to a good conclusion. Is it okay if we put this off?
And the people are waiting 3 months. I am tired tomorrow. I am tired tomorrow.
No, that's not it.
I just joke.
I think the point is, though, is if you have these conversations before you have an argument or before you have a situation, and you know that, hey, if you or me are tired and I say, hey, I'd like to put this conversation off till tomorrow or till later, that you understand why. That it's not to avoid, it's to be able to engage logically in the conversation with the passion, but balanced. You know, it's not a work-life balance, it's a passion-logic balance that we want in a conversation with our partner. I'm going to skip that. That was the body language thing. So are we up to five? Our fifth E is educate. We want to look at individual development programs within the relationship. So what do I need to learn? What does my partner need to learn? What, you know, each of us figuring out how do we grow individually so we grow as partners? Because it may be that we each need to grow in an area that help the communication and conversation. Skill and knowledge based relationship training. Are there some good courses you can take together on relationships?
Yeah.
On how to set goals, how to set visions. You know, that's one thing maybe couples don't do, is that they love each other so much that they're not really thinking about 5 and 10 years out. They're thinking about our passion now. And maybe you need to learn how to work with somebody. It makes the path smoother.
Yeah.
When somebody doesn't know their future with you, it makes every day more rocky.
I that's just remind me that there's some couple that I know that want to say, I don't want to buy a house because I don't want to know now the new house is for two. If we do divorce,
what happened?
If you live in this life, and I know this couple have like the 10-year marriage and never buy the house because they want to have something planning together to the future. So it's living in the air.
Because if we buy the house, then now something may happen. But if we don't, it's always having the future. Someday we'll do this, which is kind of stressful. But
versus that you make a more commitment, do something and move on.
The way to memorize educate is the roof of the house. You grow your house, you grow the roof by becoming more educated. You put more into your brain. You look at the cultural elements that you want to build upon, the things that you want to be known for with your partner. Co-create. You co-create what your future is. And we talk about co-creation, that I'm not responsible for my future. Lizette's not responsible for our future, but we both are. So in essence, we each are, but we're not individually totally responsible by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We're involved with each other.
Yeah.
So together, We have to take care of that. But being the roof is educate. Just think of that also. The top of the house being like the hat that somebody wears at graduation from college. The sixth E.
Engage.
So engage kind of means we want to talk about the rewards of a relationship. We have to have rewards. We move towards things that reward us. We move away from things that penalize us. So having some celebration, which will affect us, in a positive way. The rewards of, okay, you know what? We're going to put a pool behind the house, or we're going to go one day a week and do something exciting together as a reward. We talked about, celebrating. We talk about celebrating. We have our anniversary we have one monthly, but yeah. Sometimes we'll have our anniversary week, from the day we met to the day we were married. It all happened within the same week, a year apart, but it's we call it our anniversary week, from the anniversary of the day we met to the anniversary of our wedding. And so we do multiple things that whole week long, but then every month also can remind us of that.
It's an excuse for celebrating.
It is. But go back to this, these are some things taken from work that now we're applying into a relationship. Feedback and 360 degree assessment. What does that mean? Well, if we have family members, we have friends, we have children, we can say, hey, how does it look like Lizette and I are doing in the relationship? What do you see? What do you like about how we act with each other? Is there anything? Like, you can get feedback from others. You know what? You guys are always fabulous together. Or, you always over-talk Lizette.
Lizette never talk because you talk.
that's what I'm saying.
Let me talk.
So getting feedback, and then going back to the rewards and benefits, is that you need to have rewards of the relationship. It's not just to have a wonderful person in your life, but having a wonderful person in your life that allows you two together to do things that maybe you would never do otherwise, like go on a vacation, go on a trip, go to a nice restaurant once a year. Lizette learns more and more. She's amazing at cooking, and it seems like she's just picking up more and more, and I'm rewarded by that. So it's like, yeah, absolutely.
Eating everything.
The memory tip for this is the back of your house. It's like it's the backyard of your house, the back deck, the porch, the area where you celebrate, where you have recreation time with your partner, with your family. It gives you a chance to look at everything you've done in the relationship and say, yes, this is the reward of having this relationship.
And the capacity to recognize this, because sometimes we are so distracted, you don't see how many good stuff that we have. Mm-hmm. Life. Simple. Sitting after.
Recognize the difference in my life that it's been since I've met Lizette, what we've been able to do and accomplish together, and the fabulous times we've had, the places we've traveled, the food we've eaten, the time we've spent with our children, the time we've spent visiting different family members, and when you see that, and you should share that with your partner. Right?
I want to live with you.
In summary, the E6 program for relationships, setting expectations together as a couple, equip yourselves with actual equipment, have a car that works so you don't have to sit there and have the stress of having it break down all the time. Evaluate your relationship and figure out what you need to change and do differently to strengthen it. Look at your emotional intelligence and how to bring that into the relationship, slowing down in times of argument to make sure you're arguing with your prefrontal cortex. What do we say? Balancing passion and logic. Educate yourself in many things, in relationship as well as just areas for individual development. And then finally, engage in rewarding yourselves in a relationship with the benefits of that relationship. Make sure you're speaking about them, Make sure you're speaking up the relationship. And I think we heard about that. People who speak highly of their partner, even if it is somewhat like overly stated, have happier, longer-term relationships than people who think, oh, I'm just realistic. You need to be positive, set positive expectations, and you will live those positive expectations in and through your relationship.
Yes.
And remember what we said. What if people took responsibility for the success of their relationships through the systems they use rather than the partners they choose? Thank you for watching 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Have a great week.
See you.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.